Hey there, this is Danny Sunshine Bauer from Better Leaders, Better Schools, and the School Leadership Series, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, today I'm talking with Karen Gross. That's right. The author of Breakaway Learners is back, but this time we're talking about her children's series that's all about Lady Lucy. We're talking about her first book in the series, Lady Lucy's Quest, and then we get into some of the other books coming down the road. A lot to hear about, a lot to learn. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Karen Gross is a higher education consultant based in Washington, D.C. She serves as senior counsel for Finn Partners and sits on the advisory council of the Penn Center for Minority-Serving Institutions at the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education. Karen was the president of Southern Vermont College for 8 years and was a senior policy advisor at the U.S. Department of Education. Additionally, Karen was a tenured law professor for more than 2 decades. Karen Gross is also the author of Breakaway Learners, Strategies for Post-Secondary Success with At-Risk Students, the award-winning Failure and Forgiveness, and Teach Your Children Well. She also can be found frequently writing about educational issues in many journals, magazines, and reports, such as the Huffington Post, the Chronicle of Higher Education, and the Washington Post. Today, we're talking about her first book in her children's series, Lady Lucy's Quest. Please welcome Karen to the show. Say hi to everyone, Karen.
Hello, everyone. Nice to be with you.
It's great to have you back, and you've been very busy, because the last time we talked, you just had the Lady Lucy was finished and ready to be talked about, and you were working on the next book, and now I see you got a whole bunch of them, so we're going to get there close to on the way, and we're going to talk about those in a little bit. So
terrific. I look forward to doing that.
So Karen, you know, back in episode 180, we talked about your book Breakaway Learners. Today we're talking about Lady Lucy's Quest, the first in your children's series. So tell me a little bit, why a children's series of books?
So I think many people thought it was odd, actually, that I was writing children's books. What's a college president doing writing books for kids? The reality is that I think one of the things I learned as a college president is that if you really want to improve the educational pipeline, if you really want to make a difference, you have to start early and often, as they say about voting in Chicago. You have to reach young children. And so I decided to write a children's book series so that I had an opportunity to read to children. So I had an opportunity to see schools, elementary schools, nursery schools, after school programs. So I did it so that I could help kids and learn more about the environment in which they're learning.
Oh, excellent. What a cool thing. And I can't imagine in your group of peers and so forth that they were kind of going, okay.
Well, that's what they do every time. They look at me and go, really? And I go, really?
That's funny. So before we get into the content, I want to say that the artwork is amazing and there's a neat story that goes with it. You know, because what is really cool is that the artists were high school seniors. In the book, there's the following comment. This book and the process of its creation provide a concrete example of the kind of deep collaboration that can occur in education, where the teacher is a learner and the learners are teachers. First, tell us a little bit about the artists, and then could you share your thoughts about the comment?
Sure. So the book is illustrated, as are all the subsequent Lady Lucy books, except for one, which is done based on photographs. And these are two artists that I met when they were seniors in high school at a school in Troy, New York. And they needed a senior project. I needed some illustrators. And the school showed me some of their drawings and said, which one would you like to have illustrate the book? And I said, I can't pick between them. I'd like both of them to do it. And they said, that's fine. And what happened is a collaboration where I shared the story, I shared my vision, and then they would make drawings and I would look at them and think about them and make suggestions. And ultimately, they got to know me and what I was looking for. They got the story, they understood the story. And what happened is the illustrations that you see. And we've continued the collaboration. We've continued it through Lady Lucy's Dragon Quest. We've continued it through Lady Lucy's Peace Quest. We've continued it through Lady Lucy's Unicorn Find. So it's been a remarkable collaboration. And they're now obviously in college. And so they've grown as the books have grown and our relationship has grown. So it's an amazing collaboration. And the reason for the quote is that I think I was skeptical as to whether or not they could truly capture the book and its spirit. And not only did they succeed, but they made the book come alive with the most breathtaking illustrations of Lady Lucy that one could have imagined. And what they felt about the story, which is exhibited in their drawings, moved me and showed me that this was a collaboration of deep understanding. Really remarkable.
Oh, it's awesome, because the characters do come alive. Their facial expressions and such, it fits right with the story, and you get a feel for who they are and what's going on. I mean, they're very nice, very nice.
And let me just add, their name is actually on the cover of all of the books. And I think that's important too, because it shows the role they played. And also I hope it shows the value that I ascribe to the work they do and the amazing artists that they are.
That's excellent. That's what a cool thing to have even before you're in college. I don't know if they're art majors or not, but, they are excellent, because they're, you know, what a great thing. They're going into college already with, you know, a nice start to their portfolio, which is an active children's series that they're illustrating. Cool. So that's awesome. So let's go into the story of Lucy. Where did your inspiration for Lucy come from? Are you or someone else you know Lucy?
Well, I'll come back to the question as to whether I'm Lucy, but she actually was inspired by a real woman named Lady Lucy Duff Gordon that history seemed to have forgotten. And Lady Lucy Duff Gordon was a fashion designer in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And she had a very famous legal case that Judge Cardozo decided, not in her favor, I might add, that I always use with law students. But I would go back and look at the case and look at the language and look at who she was and think about her life and that no one knew what she had accomplished. And so what I then did is I did some reading about her and her family. And it turns out she was on the Titanic and she was saved. And she had a life story with many ups, but many downs. She was the first woman to advertise in a clothing catalog. She was the first woman to have many sort of unique fashions, high fashion. And when she was on the Titanic and the Titanic sank, she got off with her husband, Sir Cosmo. And as you may know, much of their jewelry was lost at sea. And then these divers have gone and recovered some of the jewelry, including some of Lady Lucy's jewelry. And when I read to children, I wear a replica of one of the rings that they found that was hers at the bottom of the ocean after the sinking of the Titanic.
Wow. That's cool. That's what a neat historical character to fashion her after. And that's a great story to bring back to life.
I'm sorry. You can also see her on the movie Titanic, the one with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes.
Lady Lucy shows up there with Sir Cosmo. So kids can read the story. Most kids have heard of the Titanic. And I guess for me, much the way the movie Hidden Figures showed stories of women no one knew about in the space program, this story, I hope, ultimately reminds people of real characters in our history that we've long forgotten.
Oh, that's excellent. That's awesome. That's, you know, being able to, like you said, and what's really neat is kind of going back to what you said before. So you brought this case back into when you taught law. Is that, that's what you're saying?
Yes. I used to actually have a Lady Lucy Day.
Oh, neat.
And I had a Lady Lucy Day that was so popular that in, after a student was in the class that offered it, they'd frequently come back just to sit in on Lady Lucy Day.
Oh, nice.
And I wanted law students to see that behind all these cases are real people who lead lives and had feelings and had experiences. And all you need is like a little piece of their life. And it's important to remember who they are. So I think the qualities that Lady Lucy exhibits, which is strength and courage and endurance, are the qualities that Lady Lucy Duff Gordon exhibited and that I hope many children can exhibit.
That's excellent. And the historian in me, by the way, I mean, you're talking to someone who's a couple degrees in history. This is loving this. That's so cool. I get lost in these stories for hours.
All of my children's books have layers. They're like layer cakes. So you can read the actual story, but you can do more than that. You can learn about history in all of them.
So that's great. So all of them have some sort of history in them, and that's an excellent aspect of writing to put that reality in there, which I love. So
for me, one of the most important things is that kids can see the layers of a story. So at one level, it's just a story. But at another level, it speaks to history, in this case. In other cases, it speaks to language and the use of language. My hope is that teachers will use these books in ways that are not just about the story, that they teach the book in layers. So one layer is the story. Another layer is history, some piece of history that ties into the book. Then there's a layer related to language and use of language, whether that's rhyming or alliteration or some other kind of language sophisticated use, including large vocabulary. Then I hope that they'll also see something perhaps about the author and what the author's thinking about or feeling or reflecting in the story. And then lastly, I hope they appreciate the joy of illustration. So it's a multi-layer cake way of thinking about children's literature.
That's awesome. I love it. And it comes through. So that's neat to know that you did all of that as the word is popping in mind is scheme. That's not what I mean it as a, not as a bad thing. It's neat. It's all planned to have those layers in there like that. That's awesome.
Yes. And actually when I talk to teachers about the books, I show a piece of layer cake.
Nice.
And I literally show how the book can be deconstructed in a layer cake so that they can teach it in all of its layers. And in fact, there are certain of these books that I've used for a year in a school, just one book. And playing off everything from the story to the history to the word use to other pieces of it that can inform how students think about books and literature and history and word use and authors.
Oh, that's excellent. I love it. And so what it says to everyone and the audience should be picking up on is that this is way more than just, you know, there's more to a children's book than what some people may think.
I think that's true. I think people think, oh, you just told a story.
Yes.
And I'd like to think I did vastly more than tell a story, although I most assuredly told a story, and I hope a really good one.
Yes, you did. And I want to make sure I get something correct in spelling here. So Lady Lucy, is it D-U-F-F, Gordon?
Duff? The the real Lady Lucy, right, on whom this is based, is Lady Lucy Duff, D-U-F-F, dash Gordon. And her husband is Sir Cosmo, C-O-S-M-O. And actually, if you go to the book's website, which is www.ladylucysquest.com, you'll see a little description of Lady Lucy Duff Gordon.
Excellent. And so anybody listening, just remember, I have all these links in my show notes, and so you'll be able to find that there as well. So that'll be good. Yeah, just awesome stuff. So it shows you how complicated this children's book is, and the series, because there's more to it than just, like you said, this. Some people will be going, yeah. All you do is create a few characters. They have something good happening, they have something bad happening, and we're all happy in the end, right? And no, not quite.
Well, actually, it fits a prototype for children's stories. Fables and certain kinds of parables have three quests or three challenges or three things that happen. And this book has three. So it's fitting that pattern too. So if you think of most children's books that are like this, they actually have three of whatever it is that needs to be conquered or done or met.
Oh, that's excellent though. It's a neat pattern to see that it's there. So what I'd like to do is, let's kind of go into the book a little bit, because Lady Lucy's quest starts off this way. More than anything else, Lucy wanted to be a knight. But girls could not be knights, and most assumed it must be in the rules, but it wasn't. So who is the, and what I did was I just shortened there, the quote, everybody, that I'm, is more than anything else, Lucy wanted to be a knight. But rather quickly, you find out that girls could not be knights, and most assumed it was in the rules that they couldn't be knights, but it wasn't written down. So let's talk about this. Who's the main audience for Lady Lucy? And tell me why.
I think most people would tell you that I'm writing children's books, but my hope is that they interest adults as well. And I hope they raise issues, which is another piece of the layer cake, that matter and that people can talk about over dinner. So you may not want to share the story of Lady Lucy actually wanting to be a knight, but it does raise the question about, are there impediments to girls or boys doing what they want to do? And if there are impediments, are they in the rules? Does it say somewhere you can't do something? And if it isn't rules, what is it that keeps us from becoming what we want to become? And so my hope is that this book fits into a bigger discussion about helping kids become the person that they want to be, follow the career they want to follow, even if there appear to be impediments along the way.
Oh, that's excellent. And it comes out quite clear. And that's cool that you're writing towards adults as well here, because everything is nice. It's a happy children's story that it progresses forward and gets happier as dreams are pursued and such. But to also know that, you know, hey, adults, take a look at this, and there's a message here for you as well. And one of the things that it turns out that to be a knight, a candidate must pass three tests: endurance, strength, and courage. She wants to try, you know, but she's not encouraged. She wants to try, but she's not encouraged to try. And one character even says that she will never pass. Talk about a lesson that you hope is gleaned from the journey of pursuing her dream.
So I think there are several lessons. First of all, they try to make the test so hard that she'll never pass. And what she does is she comes up with unique and creative and bold solutions to problems that people were sure she would never, ever, ever figure out. So they send her into the dark woods. They make her move a big boulder. They tell her she has to demonstrate courage. And what she does is she creatively thinks about these problems and solves them in creative ways. So my first hope is that it encourages kids to realize that there isn't one way to solve a problem. There are many ways to solve problems. And if one can think creatively and boldly, one can succeed. The second thing I want people to realize is that endurance, strength, and courage are often viewed as physical characteristics. So strength, can you pick something up? And endurance, can you withstand running around for 26 miles? And courage, can you slay a dragon? But a lot of those thoughts can also be ways of reflecting on what you do within your own psyche, your own brain. So strength can be internal, personal strength. Endurance can reflect withstanding difficult things and managing to navigate them. And courage can also be an inside feeling and capacity that allows you to move forward. So what I want kids to learn and see is that these three words, which look like they're related to physical success, also can relate to psychological success.
Well, that's excellent, because that's, you know, and it shows in her creativity in solving the difficult challenges that, that point comes through loud and clear. Very nice. So is there one character trait that you hope the reader will connect with the most and want to emulate?
I think the trait is that she's not scared off by others who don't believe in her, like her family, like the community, like the other knights. But what she does do is she finds another community that will support her and believe in her. And I hope what kids get out of it, even if it's subliminal, it's that you can find people who will support your efforts and help you, even if those aren't the obvious people. So for Lady Lucy, it isn't her mother or her father or her brother, Neville the Devil. It isn't the other knights, and it isn't the community, but it is the animals and creatures of the forest who stand behind her and help her every inch of the way. So she found a community of support, as I hope children will if they aren't finding it at home.
That's excellent. And it comes through loud and clear. So do you have a favorite part of the story? And if so, what is it? Why?
I think my favorite, well, I have many little favorite parts, but I think my most favorite part is when she realizes that she's been courageous by just trying to become a knight. And that's about self-realization, thinking about yourself, thinking about what you're doing. And sometimes things that you do are courageous and you need to recognize them. When she asks to step up on a stool so that she can be seen because she's tiny, that for me is my favorite part. She actually steps up and declares, "The most courageous thing I've ever done is I've tried to become a knight." And when I read this story to kids, I usually pull over a chair at this point and I ask for a volunteer to step up on the chair. And some little boy or little girl gets up and I ask the question that Sir Winston asks, "What is the most courageous thing you've ever done?" And this little voice of a 6, 7, 8, or 9-year-old, or even a 3-year-old says, "I tried to become a knight," and then all the other kids clap. That's about owning a piece of your future. So that's my favorite part.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I could see that happening in class. That's with the kids stepping forward and so forth. I like that. Very nice. So let's take a look. Let's do a little previewing here, because you have a second book in the Lucy series called Lady Lucy's Dragon Quest. And here's a description from Amazon. Lady Lucy's life as a knight does not proceed as she anticipated. Rather than being welcomed into the round table, she is treated by the other knights as an outsider. In a strange twist of fate, however, Lady Lucy saves her kingdom with the help of a creature that was much feared, a dragon. What else would you like to share about this journey for Lucy?
So the second book, the first book I would describe as a picture book, although it certainly can be read by older kids. This second book and the ones that follow are what I would call chapter books, so that they appeal to older kids, even though they do have some illustrations in them. And this book is about, she thought her quest was met when she became a knight. But what she sees pretty quickly is that even though she is a knight, she isn't treated like a knight. She isn't treated like the other knights. And by the way, that's not an uncommon issue for many people who reach some goal and then realize, oops, I haven't gotten exactly what I thought I'd get when I get to that goal. And so she realizes that there is more she has to do in order to be recognized as a knight and valued for that.
And this is cool that, so you're changing the format up to go to the chapters, the chapter stories. And what I like is that we are getting into another, a type of story here, which does happen. I don't know whether you're, girl or boy, I think this can speak to all of us when you run into something that you achieve and then suddenly it's not the world you thought it was going to be.
I agree with you. And let me just say that the books in some way should grow with the children. So as a younger child finishes Lady Lucy's quest, the first book, and they grow a little older, they can read or have read to them Lady Lucy's Dragon Quest. And then each of these books gets incrementally a little harder, so you can read them as you grow. She is growing with you as you, the child reader, grow.
That's excellent. Look at all this.
There are many levels to this here. And by the way, in answer to your earlier question, I often say to kids at the end, do you have any questions? And one of the questions I'm often asked about Lady Lucy's quest is, are you the author, Lady Lucy, which is the question you asked. And I actually think we're all Lady Lucy in some way. I think we all have quests and dreams. And I think many of us have to use strength and endurance and courage to get to where we're going. So I would answer the question by saying, yes, I am Lady Lucy, but so are you.
And see, there I was thinking that you're going to kind of see if I let it slide at the answer to that question or not. So thank you for taking me back to my question. That's awesome. And I could see kids wanting to know that too. That's not just kids. I asked it. So nice.
So by the way, after you read the book with me, you usually get something, a feather or something that represents the book. Different for different of the books. But one of the things you get is a stamp that says Lucy on it, that you, like a stamp you would get like at, you know, a store that goes on your hand and washes off after.
Oh, I got you.
And I always tell teachers, you know, you can tell parents it really does wash off after a couple days. But it's a way that kids can carry Lady Lucy with them after the reading of the book and know that they've been with the author and carry her literally on their hand.
That's neat. Very neat. I like that. So, and you mentioned this earlier, but there are three more books in the works. I understand Lady Lucy's Unique Unicorn Quest, Lady Lucy's Giraffe Laugh Book, and Lady Lucy's Peace Quest. The Giraffe Book is co-sponsored by the Giraffe Conservation Foundation, which I'll have a link to that in the show notes as well, and will be out for World Giraffe Day on June 21st, 2018. This is really cool. What else would you like to share about these adventures? And you got to talk a little bit about how that happened, that connection with Giraffe Day.
Sure. So Lady Lucy's Dragon Quest, to go back, is about how she helps a creature that people were scared of turn into an adored creature. And he may be a big dragon and he changes color for reasons that kids can figure out when they read the book. But he turns out to be blue at the end of the book. And in the next book, another creature is created, and that's a unicorn. And the unicorn and the dragon become friends, and they realize that there's nobody around that looks like them. And each of them sort of bemoans how they look. The unicorn is upset because she's got a big horn and she's multicolored. And the dragon is upset. His name is Dylan. He's upset because he's so big that he can't find any creatures nearly his size. So Lady Lucy feels bad for both of them and goes into a library with them and decides to see if in all these books they can find some creature that looks a little bit like either of them or both of them. And as they're looking at the books, they happen upon a giraffe. And giraffes, as you may know, look very funny, but they have horns, they are multicolored, and they are very big. Yes. And so both Dylan the dragon and Tapestry say, wait a minute, this is a creature that kind of looks a bit like us in an odd way. And they start telling giraffe jokes. And one joke leads to another, and they're all laughing. And finally, Sir Winston, the oldest and wisest knight, says to them, what is so funny? And he doesn't seem like the most humorous person, but they tell him the jokes, and he starts laughing. And he gives them a challenge, and he says, if you can come up with 50 giraffe jokes, then I'll, you know, award you something. And Lady Lucy says, no, what you'll really award me is you'll send out a quest to get 12 giraffes to join us in our kingdom. And he says, fine, if you can come up with 50 giraffe jokes, then we'll send out the knights to find 12 giraffes. And so Dylan and Tapestry and Lady Lucy set out to write jokes. And they do. They end up writing way more than 50, and the book is filled with the jokes. And the jokes play off who a giraffe is. Like, what kind of school would a giraffe like? A high school. Or what's a giraffe's favorite school supply? A highlighter. Well, I mean, they go on and on and on. I mean, I could share some more
right,
with you.
Right.
But there are 70 or so of them, so, you know, you can laugh about them. But the jokes are actually premised on an understanding about giraffes. Like, you have to know that a giraffe is a vegetarian. You have to know that a giraffe has a long neck. You have to know something about the giraffe habitat and where they originally come from. So part of the story is sharing the history of giraffes. And so I reached out to the Giraffe Conservation Foundation to make sure that the facts were right. And they pointed out that people misunderstand giraffes and, you know, they think they don't sleep, or they think that, you know, different things are true about them, which aren't. And so they read the book and they made some suggestions to make sure it was factually accurate. And they pointed out that giraffes are an endangered species. I didn't know that either. And their job is to help giraffes survive. And so we made an arrangement that in exchange for their helping edit the book and making sure it was right, that a portion of the proceeds of this book would go to their foundation to help save giraffes.
It's just neat seeing that another collaboration take place to make the story come alive. And first of all, I got to say this, of course, having characters in a story have the task of creating jokes is then setting you up for, I would think, a million more jokes, as depending on the age of the students. how many more jokes you're going to get to add to the storyline, I would think.
But I just to show you that we've had more collaborations, I actually, the same idea as the illustrators in terms of using young people to help write the books, I did go to a school in Cleveland called the Hathaway Brown School. And some of the kids actually helped write some of the giraffe jokes. And they evaluated the jokes, which I co-wrote with Mark Wine. They actually evaluated some of them and said, oh, whoa, that's not a good one. Kids won't get that one. How about this one? And so they were really helpful. And then at the same school, some of their art students helped design actually the book in terms of how it will be used, because the illustrations for this book are actually photographs of a giraffe collection that I have that will then be auctioned off and the proceeds used to help buy books for kids who can't afford them.
Oh, excellent. So do you want to take a moment to talk about that? How did they find out more about that?
How did they find out?
About the auction.
Ah, well, the auction isn't public yet. And what you'll see in the book are beautiful photographs of the same number of giraffes as there are jokes. So some of the giraffes are teeny tiny, and some of them are much bigger. Some are made of glass, some are made of wood, some are made of ceramic, some are made of bottle caps. And each giraffe will be shown separately with each joke. And then there's one image of all the giraffes together. So when you finish the book, you'll be able to see a listing of all the giraffes and name them if you want. And then you'll see a little description in the book that there's an auction at which all of the giraffes that are shown there, except for maybe one or two that I keep, will be put up for auction.
Excellent. And just to remind everybody, the book is coming out the same time as World Giraffe Day, which is June 21st, right?
Yes. And World Giraffe Day is in part to tell the real story about giraffes and how to help prevent their extinction, and then some information about them. So this book is designed to foster and further the goals of this World Giraffe Day. I should also add, you know, as a literary matter, jokes are not that easy to either write or to understand. You need a real subtlety of language. You need to know about wordplay. You need a rather sophisticated sense of double meaning and sort of twists of the way thoughts can come about. And so they're a really good vehicle for helping kids learn about word use and creativity. Although they sound trivial jokes, they're actually remarkably hard to both create and understand. But once you get them, you just start laughing and laughing and laughing.
I love that. As a fan of comedy, and especially comedy of the past, vaudeville, and people who had to go through developing their own humor and doing things, and then some of it's quite physical where you have to see their look or whatever after they say a line or something like that, I totally understand how difficult it would be to create your own as you're trying to, you know, you wouldn't really see other people's reactions. So by getting other people to give you feedback on it before it printed, nice.
So the other thing I hope will happen, which you anticipated, is that this means that kids and their teachers can write jokes about different kinds of animals, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be giraffes. There could be lion jokes or hippopotamus jokes or panda bear jokes. So the idea is to foster a culture in which there's creativity and fun and engagement while there's also real learning about words and word use and the like. So that is the Giraffe Laugh book.
That's awesome. Looking forward to seeing it when it's out. And as we kind of draw to a close now, what I'd like to do is, where can a listener find out more about Lucy, get their own copy of the book, and also find out about the whole series? And if a listener would like to reach out to you, what would be the best way?
Sure. So the books are all available at Amazon and Barnes and Noble. You can get them online. They're available at some independent bookstores. You can also find links about the books and to order the books from the website for the whole series. And you can actually see me there reading the books in the United States, in Canada, all over the place. And little excerpts from various things kids have said about the books or others. And the website is www.LadyLucysQuest.com, without any apostrophe. And my hope is that people will visit the site because you can actually send me a note. So if you have an idea for a story, or you have an idea of a giraffe joke, or if you just want to say hello and tell me that these books have helped you, please reach out. I'd like that.
Excellent. I love it. And Lady Lucy stories are amazing, and I love how the layers that you put into them, all the work that you've done to make them just so much more. There's so much more to the stories than what someone would think before reading, which is incredible. So I got two last questions for you. And if you were given a chance to talk about Lady Lucy and her dreams to an audience of elementary age students, what would you emphasize most from the story?
I think I would leave kids with two phrases. The first is believe in the power of the possible, which is a phrase I use a lot. It actually isn't in the book, but it's one I often use when I talk to kids or adults. And the other is dream big. And Lucy, Lady Lucy, did both. She believed in the power of the possible, and she was able to dream big. And so those are the things that I would say to kids, because I think success rests in all of us. And the question for me is, how can we help kids succeed? And I hope these books help do just that.
That's awesome. I love it. And I really love that. Believing in the power of the possible and dreaming big, period. To be able to, because there's so many things that are going to pop up in our way sometimes that are going to keep us, you know, thinking that you can't do it. And it, you know, they're going to help push us back. And I love that, you know, dream big and keep pushing to achieve it.
Also, just one more thing.
Sure.
The power of the possible has this alliteration, and the book is filled with alliteration. And so kids are actually learning a fair amount about writing and word use, even just in answering a question as profound as the one you asked, which is, what is it that I hope kids get out of it?
I love it. I love it. What advice would you give to teachers who might have a story or two in them that they would like to see in book form one day?
Well, I actually think we all have a story or two in us that we'd like to tell. And I think there are so many ways that one can tell these stories today, given social media and online opportunities to publish, as well as through publishers. And I would tell them what I tell kids: believe in the power of the possible and dream big. And so you can get a story published somewhere and shared more widely. And one of the really interesting things for me is I speak Spanish, and I got worried that all of what I was writing was in English. And so Lady Lucy has been translated into Spanish. And she has a different name in Spanish, because Lady Lucy has alliteration, right? Lady Lucy.
Yes.
So I needed something for the Spanish version. So it's La Saga de la Señorita Sofía. It's the same stories. It has slightly different words to make it work in Spanish. So it's not a literal translation. But now Lady Lucy in the activity book exist in Spanish. And so my hope is that lots of kids can believe in the power of the possible. El poder de la posibilidad. So that's it in Spanish.
Excellent. 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 Well, Karen, thank you so much for sharing Lady Lucy with us. She's an inspiring character who sends positive messages, and I'm looking forward to hearing and reading more about her journeys. Best wishes.
Thank you, and nice to be with you as always, and hope to do it again.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.